this morning with the sundown shining in.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining.
Lord of Big Stacks and Jack, now tomorrow we got Greg Pappas on the board. Soon to be moving over here as Matt Byrne gets here. He'll be here in a second. We have S&P futures down 11, NASDAQ futures down 24. They were down quite a bit more than that last night. I had the S&Ps down 35 and the NASDAQ down 100 and something. So we've come back, I'm going to say, two-thirds of the way. Last week we had a nice update on Friday. However, on for the week we were down. We started the week 576 in the S&P, and we ended up at 562. So that's a couple percent down. So it was not a good week. Although Friday definitely helped quite a bit in terms of if you're bullish. Dow was up 674, S&P up 117, Nasdaq up 451. So it was a nice comeback on Friday. We'll see if it holds. We have a you know, a lot of people trade a lot of different styles on our IB platform. That some people, we've got some people who love to buy the dip, and they had kind of a black eye week, but made, you know, a chunk back on Friday because finally the buy the dip won after about 15 times of not winning. What do you say to that, Greg? The buy the dip.
I'm looking at Polymarket and the chance of the Fed changing, or the Fed leaving the interest rates the way they are is about 99% right now.
Yeah.
So I think that they're saying that, you know, we're not we're not moving. 98.8%. That's Polymarket. I'm not sure what CME might be at 100.
Yeah, it's I don't think they're going anywhere. I mean, my concern with that is a 10-year rate because that's the one that inflation expectations is going to influence, and it's very simple. Why would you give your money to somebody for 10 years at 4% if you think the inflation is going to be 5? That means they're winning, you're losing, right?
Yep.
So I got another shot of, you know, you look around you in the world, not only just in Washington but every places, and you see things that you thought you'd never see. And this morning, you know, walking in across the expressway, which you always have to be careful, of course some guy blows through a stone cold red at about 80 with the blacked out windows. We have no enforcement of anything in the city. Sort of like anywhere in the country, I guess. But of course, when I walked across the expressway at what, quarter to six. The good news is I got a buzz on.
Wasn't a whole lot of problems this weekend, I saw.
I was watching
the scanner and watching.
Well, yesterday
the
was a blizzard
everything.
Almost, so it was 30 degrees, so that helps a little.
Yesterday definitely was. They weren't out like they were on Saturday.
No.
So between, I want to say, the drinking and the nice weather, you know, it wasn't so bad. Or at least I didn't hear about anything.
Well, two of the people had to jump out their third floor window because somebody invaded their house and was shooting at them.
Shooting?
Yeah, so they had to jump out their third floor window. That didn't work out too well.
Yikes.
Yeah. So, you know, it's stuff happens. You know, just, you know, when you have no kind of enforcement, right? So I guess
it worked well because Saturday, you know, there was St. Patrick's celebrations and such, and then yesterday was Selection Sunday, so, you know, go out on Saturday, stay in on Sunday.
You didn't stay in if you're on the south side
on Sunday.
What was Southside Irish parade?
Was the parade? Oh,
yeah,
not with snow, no thanks.
So Saturday I was for those who don't live in Chicago, it's kind of an odd spot. Of course, the rest of the country's got way worse weather than we do, but I'm going to say going out to the burbs Saturday, the T-shirt. Yesterday morning, I got everything I could throw on. It wasn't enough. I come out of the Myers, and the car's covered with snow. I'm like, what the hell is this? What are we doing, 40-point drop in 8 hours?
Yep. Yep.
That's a number.
It was typical spring weather.
So, Greg, what do you make of we have, for those, you know, I don't talk about it too much, but at PTI we have two clearing arrangements. One is with RBC, and that's your, well, I'd say the more traditional brokerage firm arrangement.
Clearing arrangements meaning?
Yeah. Well, PTI is not a clearing firm, so what we do is if you write us a check, it goes to, we contract another company that's way bigger than
us. For the listeners, yeah, it's a good thing.
Yeah, it's called a clearing firm. So in other words, all the things that you would get from Merrill Lynch or Fidelity or something, you get from us, not from PTI. You get it from RBC, Royal Bank of Canada, is our traditional clearing agent. So all this money's housed there, your IRAs with them, all those kinds of things. And we're called a correspondent firm, and they are a correspondent clearing firm. Well, at PTI, we have two of those arrangements. The other was with Interactive Brokers, which is the online firm that people who sign up there usually sign up to be able to do futures trading as well. At IB, it's a little, the cost structure is a little different. So for each individual person, there's a better spot, okay, for what they expect to have done or what they like to trade and if they want to do it themselves, those kinds of things. But the people at IB are a little more...
usually more self-directed,
yeah,
sophisticated.
Self-directed.
They've got a better
sophisticated,
API, more electronic.
But some of the people there might have, they might manage or trade two-thirds of their account and they want us to manage the other third. Well, you know what we're starting to get, Greg, is some, which we haven't had in a long time. And when I say a long time, when back in 2000, you know, PTI was here, 40 to 45% of our business was futures. And now that has dramatically dropped off. Well, part of it is because you can trade a lot of the what used to be futures and ETFs. I mean, you don't need to trade the silver at the CME. You can do the SOV contract, those kinds of things. Or same thing with the GLD.
Still better to trade the futures,
yeah,
by the way, for everyone listening, because unless you want to be racing people like me, you might as well. But it's better for smaller accounts,
yeah,
or if you're not willing to take them, or if you don't want that, you know, size, then...
Well, all of a sudden, what I'm saying is that business is starting to grow again. And some of the people now are inquiring, is, hey, do you guys manage, you know, a futures portfolio? If somebody says, this is what we want to do, and we go, oh, well, yeah.
Yeah, but futures
are... We haven't had a call for that in 20 years, but all of a sudden there is.
Futures are what the ETF managers usually are trading in order,
yes,
to...
Absolutely.
In order to get their portfolio similar to what the performance of the futures are.
If
so,
you go buy a gazillion dollars worth of the GLD, be it options or the...
They just go straight to the futures.
Yeah.
So it's, if you want to cut, kind of make sure that you have the same contracts that the ETFs have, that's going to be the futures.
Right. And so anyway, but I'm saying we're starting to get, just for anybody who wants to do that, we actually have, you know, a couple people at IB where they trade some of their options. They want us now to do some of their futures stuff. When I say manage it, we don't really do the speculative stuff. I mean, we can, but not a whole lot of people want that, nor do we like to do it for people who aren't really sophisticated. But somebody might say, hey, I want a gold position. Why don't you guys do some covered rights on the gold? We could do that on the futures side, too.
Yeah, that's usually reserved for those ETFs, like you said, and professionals. But if you're involved enough with the management and if you understand enough, then it really makes sense to do it yourself rather than to pay other people like those ETF managers
it. Yeah, why would you do that? I mean, well, a lot of people do. But the point being is the IB platform allows a lot of flexibility in the sense that you can have us manage your core portfolio. And then if you get up in the morning and go, hey, I want to buy 100 shares of X, you know, you can do it, you know, type of thing. So it gives you the freedom to do stuff on your own and apportion pieces off to either the futures management or the...
Yeah, like
yeah,
kind of what I do during the day is I've got my work accounts and such, and then I got a PTI account on and I can switch back and forth on the IB platform.
Yeah.
And really, what happens is you can, I think the app is actually better than the, what's it called? The desktop application is kind of like,
but you're a phone
it doesn't look great, but the good thing is the app is really intuitive, and you can switch back and forth, and what happens, at least for me, is I end up doing more trading on my phone. I've got the futures, my work and future stuff up on my desktop and stocks, and some futures on my phone, too. So if you have two accounts, I would recommend probably doing your computer and a tablet, or your computer and a phone, or just doing it both on your phone or a tablet and switching back and forth, because in terms of IB, I mean, the app is way better.
Well, I'm sitting there looking at the IB, and I've got, we have three screens in front of me with all these different, so it's so much easier for me to just click on one there and do something if I want to do it. But I, you know, you're a phone dude. I'm in front of the screens all day.
Yeah, I've got the ladders and stuff pulled up on my desktop, but in terms of options, I think the app for Interactive Brokers is
really
okay. Second to none. Yeah, it's, I think it was designed by the guys in the beginning, and it's really better than call it rival, you know, Schwab, TD.
It's much more a professional system. It's designed for people who, I mean, you can figure out the volatility moves, where, you know, where your stock's going to go, and you're looking at the graphs of your positions. It's all right there.
Yeah, like I pulled it up just now, and it's way better. Looking at the watch list and looking at the trade entry and stuff, it's really easy to deal with. And if you have your computer up, say with your main account, or if you had your futures on your phone, or if you had your futures on your desktop, and then your call it equity options on your phone, it's a lot easier to do it that way. Personally, if I was going somewhere, I would just get another tablet and do one in one.
Yeah, if I was going to start to travel some, I would get a tablet for sure.
Yeah.
Now, what you get, the tablet has a phone number, right?
Doesn't have to.
Well, how do you drag down from...
You connect to Wi-Fi from the phone.
Okay.
So if you've got the phone, you hotspot your phone, you connect the tablet to it, and all of a sudden you've got, you know, 5G or whatever,
really?
Right, everywhere, yeah.
Now, if you do get a phone line in there, you can't make a phone call, but you get text, right?
You can make a phone call. You do voice over IP.
Okay.
It's not the greatest, but...
But it's okay. But you get
I would say 99% similar.
Why can't you have two devices with the same number?
I don't know.
You're supposed to know all stuff here.
I wouldn't... Two devices with the same number would mean, what, two phones? Can't do that.
Or a
tablet.
Or
you could clone a SIM card, maybe, and do that.
Yeah, I can jump in on that. All right. Guys.
Hey, what's up, man?
Yeah, I've been a Google Voice customer for probably close to 20 years. One number rings multiple phones. Right now, it only rings one phone because that's all I have. But when I first moved where I live, the cell service was so crappy that I had to have a landline. So I set up Google Voice, made that my number, and then it would ring the landline and the cell phone. And when I was home, I'd pick up on the landline. When I was anywhere else, I'd pick up on the cell phone.
Cool.
And that's a voice over IP. So that's...
Well, yeah, it absolutely... Well, it is in that... Here, how it works is you go set up phones in your profile, and you tell it, you know, when you want different phones to ring, or you can just say ring them all the time. You can tell them I want to ring my whether it's your tied to your cable service or some other IP service, but we'll call it a landline for the purposes of saying it's a traditional style phone. You can say, well, I don't want that to ring after 10 o'clock at night or something like that if you don't want to be disturbed.
What about if it's Greg calling? You can shut them all off?
Oh, yeah, I can block anybody.
There you go.
Why, Tom, do you think you never get through?
I'm trying to figure that out. You know, it dawned on me now, you know, how that works.
Yeah, but that service has been around for a long time. It's probably... you know, kind of sucks from a privacy standpoint, because I'm sure Google is logging every call I get. You know, it's pretty handy. So I'm sure it's not the only service by a long shot.
I mean, I went in to try and get a tablet. It was a while ago, and I said, well, I'm not going to talk phones over to tablet, but I wouldn't mind getting my texts on there. Oh, God, no, you got to get a different phone number.
Well, you know what? Guess where I get my texts? Via Google Voice. I can use the browser, or I can use the app on multiple phones. So I have the app on my tablet. I don't use a tablet a lot, but I use a tablet a lot when I travel. So I have the app there. I have the app on my phone, and I just access it through a traditional browser when I'm at home and I have my computers open. Because
aren't some of these tablets
held a lot easier for me to type on a keyboard than it is to type on my phone?
This is a long time ago. My cousin, who is my mother's cousin, who went to school being an aerospace engineer, but unlike most, even though the guy's probably 78, the dude can still do calculus and like for his grandkids. He remembers all that stuff. Now, how you remember that stuff, I have no idea. But one of the kids was going to Ohio State, and they gave you this thing about what kind of laptop you needed, right? And he, I don't know if they still around, was a Microsoft tablet. He goes, the Microsoft tablet was better than he said it's about half the size, much easier to plunk up in class. He said it was every bit as good as any of the laptops they were telling you to get. Are those tablets that good?
Well, some of them are. It all depends on what kind of keyboard you want and what kind of dexterity you want to have. A lot of people use Chromebooks, which look like a laptop and come with a full keyboard built in, where you just open it up. Other people have a little dock that has you plunk the tablet on there, and now you have a keyboard. It just depends. They're not very big. And they don't have storage on them. That's the big thing, is you've got to, your storage is accessed over the internet, so it's parked somewhere, whatever service you're using. Could be Microsoft 365, it could be Google Drive, but whatever it is, you're not storing files on your tablet.
Okay. Hey, Kevin,
it has its limitations, but damn, if you got to go on an airplane, something that is really small, that's still, where you still can connect and you can, you watch a ball game or something like that because you're connected to the internet, is pretty nice.
Well, I mean, Audrey does all her stuff on, she's got a big laptop that she does all her real estate stuff, but she's constantly on that thing. And if you need one of these, I'm going, things as big as my desktop, for God's sake. But she has. And it's the last thing I'd want, sitting in front of a computer all day long and have to lug one of those things around. I'd want something smaller. But hey, I got a question for you, Kevin. Anything crazy with the selection process? Kevin called in to talk about the NCAA stuff. But is there a huge competition, and do you make a lot of money by hosting these things, or no?
Does who make money by hosting?
Well, I mean, if does United Center, if they host the first round, is that
okay. Or Milwaukee is an example nearby Chicago. And in fact, I am sure that's an interesting question, because I don't know the specific model. I'm sure they pay the NCAA for the rights to host, but then, they got to get something back out of it. So I don't know if that's a cut of the ticket sales, all of the ticket sales. Whatever it is, because it would behoove them then, if they get ticket sales, it would behoove the site to promote their the event. I'm sure they get something out of it. There's got to be some kind of revenue stream attached to it. They also have concessions open, and they also may have parking and things like that open. That some of them charge for parking. I'm sure they all, actually, as I think about it, they probably all charge for parking. So there's a lot of associated revenue potential for it. I just don't know how it gets distributed.
Would it be big enough? I mean, clearly every crazy football fan, especially oh man, when are the Bears get a hold of the Super Bowl again? First of all, what is that? What difference does that make to you? Were the Chicago hosts of the Super Bowl?
Was that noise? What was that noise you just made?
Well, that's my fans wailing and crying downstairs in the bar about how their poor Bears can't hold a Super Bowl team because the place isn't big enough. So what? Anyway, my point is, what's the travel? I mean, if the United Center gets the first round, which means they're going to get do they get all four? They get some on Thursday, some on Friday, then you get some on Saturday. It's a 4-day event, right?
It's a 2-day event for the first round. So they're either going to get Thursday, Saturday, or Friday, Sunday.
But I mean, they stay in the same place. They don't travel for the Saturday, Sunday game. Whatever city hosts it gets.
Oh, no, when you're parked there for the first round, you're there for the second round as well.
All right. So what would you guess the travel to Chicago would be? Is it like a? Well, it's not like a Super Bowl, but it. But it's got to be a few thousand people, I would think, that are coming to Chicago or wherever they're going.
It depends. I'm just going to use Milwaukee as an example.
So Milwaukee's hosting this year. Is that what you're trying to say?
So what do they have? Well, Illinois is in Milwaukee. Let's see if I can find it. And this one's not showing me the location. Let me do a quick find. I just happen to know Illinois is in there because I thought that was a very favorable favorable location.
Is Marquette in there, or they have to travel?
No, that you can't host at your own venue.
Oh, so Marquette plays in the arena in Milwaukee, right? They don't have. They used to have their own stadium.
They play at whatever the place is called now. They used to play in the Bradley Center, but now it's like Fiserv Forum or something like that. So you can't play on your home court. You can't play on a court where you've played X number of games. So that used to keep schools like St. John's and Georgetown used to play on campus, except for their big games, and then the big games St. John's would play in the Garden.
I'm going to test your brain
here.
You're
looking at this.
Kevin, didn't somebody got a pushback on that rule a few years ago, didn't they? Was it North Carolina or somebody played in their place? And everybody was all pissed off about it? Or was it Indiana or somebody? Somebody got in their home regional and everybody was all mad about it.
Well, if you play in Greensboro as an example, and it's Duke, it's North Carolina, even North Carolina State, if they're in, that is essentially a home game, even though they don't play regular season games there, because they all play on campus.
Okay, well, go ahead. So all these guys are going, I have to believe that...
Speaking of UNC, there was a big debate about UNC making the tournament.
We're going to talk about that.
We'll get to that, and then I'm going to have to go. But the teams that are coming to Milwaukee... for March Madness are, let's see, Iowa State is one. So
that's drivable. That's drivable. So you may or may not get overnights.
Marquette's playing in Ohio. They're playing at Rocket Arena.
Okay, they're in the East. No, how can Milwaukee and Ohio both be? They both be Midwest, right?
I think there's the one venue in Milwaukee is hosting, and then Cleveland's hosting another.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. Well, so you have Iowa State, which you might get some fans. Lipscomb.
Who the hell are they?
Where it is. but I believe it's in the South. Might be Tennessee or someplace like that. Mississippi, probably not going to get a ton of people going to Milwaukee. North Carolina, probably not going to get a ton of people going to Milwaukee. San Diego State, probably not going to get a ton of people going to Milwaukee. Kentucky, probably will get quite a few Kentucky fans there. Troy, don't think so. Illinois, you're going to get a crap ton of Illinois fans, especially from the Chicago area, are going to go up there to see the Illini play. And Xavier, you might get some, because Xavier's plays in the conference. Texas, don't know how many you're going to get from Texas either, because that's a long haul for a lot of
Texas. So you don't think it's a massive bid from the city of Milwaukee or anything like that?
Right. They bid the host.
Well, there's eight on each side, so I mean, there's 16 total.
There's a lot of games. Yeah, there's a lot of games. I would think, when you think of, it's almost like the conference tournaments are better places if you really want to make some money, because if you get a good location, like the Big Ten has played a lot in Chicago and a lot in Indianapolis, you're going to get people there. And it's a week long event. You know, it's not just 2 days. It's 4 or 5 days, depending on the size of the conference. So that becomes a pretty significant event, and a lot of people go. I've been to those before, and a lot of people do show up for it.
We had
I was wrong. There's only 8 locations.
Yeah, 8 locations.
I thought it was 16.
We had a producer. For when we first started Snacks and Jacks, he and his wife every year would go to New York for the entire week of the Big East tournament.
It's a great tournament.
Yeah. And just watch Madison. They love Madison Square Garden, and they would sit there the whole week.
Yeah, conference tournaments are fun. If you can basketball junkie the whole week long, you just go watch 4 games a couple days in a row, and then watch the semis and watch the finals. Yeah, it's great fun.
Isn't Duke playing in Raleigh?
Oh, that's a good question.
That's going to be like a home game for them.
That's what I'm saying.
You can argue that that's totally unfair or not, but on the other hand, the NCAA wants a full arena.
Yeah, so, definitely.
You know, I don't blame them for doing it. I get why they do it, but it's not necessarily fair in terms of the crowd.
Who was the guy? Kevin and I were actually talking on the phone. I was driving home last night, and
Louisville's in Lexington bracket.
Your question earlier, Greg, about the North Carolina guy who's the chairman of the committee in North Carolina just happened to get in, right?
Yeah, but he wasn't the one doing the voting.
See, now this is astounding. This is the generational thing, Kevin. Greg and I love each other, but now when you say, because I used to be chairman of committees before, right, on CBOE, I did some of this stuff. So he comes on ESPN last night. I'm listening on the way home. He goes to this huge routine about he's not even in the room. He leaves. He doesn't vote. They know it's his team. But he leaves the room. So he actually did the incredible thing of bringing his second-in-command in, who was in the room, to explain to the listeners how North Carolina got in instead of, was it West Virginia or something?
Yeah, West Virginia.
And actually, Kevin had a better explanation. If somebody would have won one of those little play-in things, they would have been. Anyway, so the guy goes through this haunt room. I'm sitting there going, I don't know, I'm getting so grumpy. What a bunch of crap. When he walks out of the room, the people in the room don't know he's from North Carolina. Does that somehow get erased from their memory when he leaves? I mean, give me a break.
Yeah. So the explanation that came from the vice chair, and it's somewhat sensible, except that he's talking about North Carolina and West Virginia being the last team in. So let's set that aside.
I thought they made the right pick.
What they said was, or what the guy said was, we had it set up so that if there were two teams in a conference final. I don't remember if it was the Atlantic 10 or something like that. But they said two teams were in the conference final. If the lower-rated team won, then both of those teams were going to get in and North Carolina was out. If the higher-rated team won, then the second-place finisher in that conference tournament was not getting in and North Carolina got in. Here's the problem. One of the things that you can look at and evaluate with teams is, and that they do use, is how they do against the different quads. And so the you line up the opponents and say, where do they fit into the pantheon of college basketball? Quad 1 is the top 25%, quad 2 the second 25%, and so on. If you look at North Carolina,
They were like 1-9. They were awful against quad 1.
They were 1-12 against quad 1.
Yeah.
Their only win was against Pittsburgh, who strangely Notre Dame beat twice, so I wouldn't get too hot about that. The second was against quad 2. They were 8-0. Against quad 3, they were 7-1. So they took a quad 3 loss, which is also bad, and that was on their home court. So if you look at that and then you stack it up, let's look at Indiana first, because I think Indiana can say, well, they were 4-13 against Quad 1, not knocking it out of the park, but they got a few wins. And if you're going to be in as one of the last teams, like a 12 seed, you would be expected to lose to a lot of the higher-rated Quad 1 teams. But Indiana was undefeated against Quad 2, Quad 3, and Quad 4. And then let's look at West Virginia. West Virginia was 6-10 against Quad 1, even a little better, and also undefeated against Quad 2, 3, and 4. So just looking at it from the quad point of view, I don't know how on earth that you can come up with North Carolina. The only thing I would say is they have a different measure called the net, and North Carolina's net rating, and I can't even begin to get into it. I don't know what's behind it.
It's similar to KenPon.
36. Indiana's was 54, and West Virginia's is 51. So I suspect that means that their weak teams were really weak. You know, their quad fours were really weak. But I can't say that for sure, because, you know, there's six quad four games for North Carolina. There's five for West Virginia, and there's four for Indiana. So I've got to look into what that net's about, but I think that quad part is very telling, because I think that's what you have to use to predict success in the tournament. You're going to have to play good teams. So how do you do against quad one and quad two, and combined? If we look at North Carolina, they're 1-12 and 8-0. So quad one, quad two, they are 9-12. If you look at West Virginia, quad one, quad two, they are 10-13. And if you look at Indiana, quad one, quad two, they are 9-13. So they're all kind of equal in that regard.
When he would walk back in the room,
it's
and his
good
team.
Teams. It's against the good teams where North Carolina really, really sucks.
Well, two quick questions. One is, if they just had, well, if they had like two more play-in games, which is another, or four more play-in games, another four teams, would all this go away, or would just mean the next four would be pissed off?
We'd be arguing about the 71st and 71st, yeah, second, third teams instead of the 68th team. So, I mean, that's the other part of this. It's hard to get too outraged about any of it, because, you know, we're talking about, you know, and you can rank them however you want. I think they're vying for a 12 seed, so, you know, who's the 48th best and who's the 49th best?
I actually think, Kevin, it's when you get down in that area, the teams are reasonably together. We're not, when I say together, of the same talent. So I almost, you know, if I went to any of these Calcuttas again, I think the 11th and 12th that play in for that play-in, and then they play the number 6 or 5 or something. For a team to already have a game under their belt and have a win, I wonder if you went back and looked at those games. I'll bet those teams do way better against the 5th and 6th teams with a game already under their belt than you would expect otherwise.
Depends on how far they have to travel, because if you're playing on Wednesday, how far and when you have to play again. Because if you take the case of Notre Dame had to do a play-in a couple of years ago, and they won the play-in, immediately had to get on a plane 2 days later, play in San Diego.
Oh, I thought the play-in was in the same place.
No, the play-in's always in Dayton.
Oh, okay.
The first four games are all, that Dayton is like the permanent home. And that's in large part because you can, you know, it's one of those, it's sort of like Memphis, where Memphis is a big hub for FedEx, because it's somewhat centrally located, and the weather's not too bad there.
Okay, so
not likely to get flight delays that far south.
How do you
south?
Get from South Bend to Dayton by flight, and the next day fly? I mean, Dayton doesn't have that big of an airport, do they? You got to go to Columbus.
You're on a charter, no matter what. So
that's true.
That's part of it's not a big deal. But still, you know, when you have to pack up and go play 2 days later in San Diego after playing in Dayton, that's tough. Now, on the other hand, if you have to pack up from Dayton and play, maybe you played in the first of the two games, even if you have a two-game stretch, and you're going from Dayton to Cleveland, that would be different. Or you're going from Dayton to Milwaukee, which, you know, is a play-in location. That's different. And so you're looking at it. The other thing to consider about the North Carolina choice is don't figure at all the power of a conference either. And, you know, the SEC got 14 of its 16 teams in. That's worth about $2 million a pop for just to play one game. At this point, the price has gone up so much. Big 10 got 8, Big 12 got 7, Big East got 5, ACC only got 4, because the ACC was not good this year. And so
well, the SEC got, what, 14?
That's like the fourth ACC team to get in. That they may have just been looking out for the conference as much as they were looking out for anything. And so don't discount that either, and just don't discount. Yeah, I'd have to go look and see who all was involved in.
Well, the SEC got 14, right? A new record?
Yeah, the SEC had 14, yep. They're going to make a crap ton of money.
How many teams were in the conference?
16.
Who were the two schmucks?
How would you like to be the team left out?
Are they that good where all 14 should be in?
I haven't watched a ton of SEC games, so I can't tell you down the line. You know, Auburn's been on and featured a lot, and we saw Auburn and Tennessee and Florida. Florida's number one seed. We keep seeing all these highly ranked teams. So I guess we'd say, yeah, they are pretty good. The conference plays a good style of basketball.
When the one lady on ESPN went through the... Who's the big star in Auburn? The guy who was hurt early in the year.
I don't remember his name.
The guy's real good, dude. And she was going through some routine about his day when he was coming back from injury, the rehab and the weight work. She totally forgot about classes. Did those kids go to school down there or what? Or was that not part of the game anymore?
Well, I assume you have to do something. Probably take an independent study course.
our guys, Greg, we go constantly back and forth. And
I watched some of that Tennessee-Auburn game, and that was...
That
was down.
Well, Florida played somebody this Saturday or yesterday. It was pretty darn good, too. How'd they play? It wasn't Alabama because they lost. Alabama and Auburn both lost. Florida played...
Yeah, they played Tennessee.
Auburn lost to Tennessee, yeah.
That was a great game. But you wonder, our Notre Dame guys, I mean, most are retired. And, I don't know what that means, but they seem to have somewhat of an idea of the world it used to be. Kevin, we're 2-3 years away from just being totally professional on this.
I was thinking about that.
It is professional.
I'm just going to give you this thought with one of my favorite expressions, and then I got to go.
All right.
So I'm going to turn you over to John. We put you in John's able hands.
Oh God! All right.
How did this all change? How did this become what it is today, which in no way resembles what college athletics has been for a long time? And my answer would be gradually and then suddenly.
Yep.
All right, gotta go, guys.
All right. Jan, you here?
I am. Good morning.
Morning. We had to usurp you for a second. I'd love to find out, maybe we'll find out more as it goes on, because it goes on for a while, what exactly the interplay is between the people that host. I know people want to host. I don't know if it's a big bidding thing. I don't think Chicago... it's a huge deal. If the United Center gets it, I think they're pretty happy. I don't know that the city's willing to pony up like $20 million to NCAA to get it. I don't know how much travel there is, depending on who the people you get. It's got to be more than 50 hotel rooms in Chicago, but is it 5,000? I don't know. It'd be interesting to find out. Because some of the places they go to, I guess they're all in pretty big cities. But didn't they have they hosted it here a while ago? Greg,
I went a bunch.
Was it? Did you see like a whole lot of
rounds.
People from that were here for 4 days that were staying in the Hilton and stuff? Or
definitely,
really,
yeah. So get the two ticket packages too, so you get the first day or whatever you get to stay for at least two of the games, and it's a blast.
And I know you guys that are into this, the new world with the. If you buy the two-ticket package and you don't get a ticket, I know all the young people don't give me crap about liking my own ticket. How do you find somebody to give the second one to? Well, you got to give them your phone number and the other crap. You can't just give them the ticket.
Yeah, I don't know. I was there most of the time, so you find something to do.
So you had all the game package. It wasn't just... So if you if they host the United Center, say Illinois is in it,
you usually can get the tickets in the first game and the second game, and then I think you might have to buy a second pass if there's more than two games that day. But it was a blast. I mean, you go sit there for the first game, or some people just, you know, come halfway through the first game just for the second game. But normally there's enough space to where those, you know, pro stadiums have 15,000, 20,000 capacity and more if they're in the bigger stadiums. But, like, you get booze that's served in there. Some, not all the colleges have alcohol that serve, and it's a great, probably like
so you
three,
can get
3 to 5 hour experience, depending on.
So you can get the whole weekend package, which would be Thursday to Sunday. You can get just your team, which would be Thursday night and then Saturday
think you
or
can
something.
I don't think you can get just your team. You have.
Well,
to
I mean,
get
you get. You, I think you get a Thursday and Saturday package.
Cause oh, so one of each.
Well, no, the, I mean, because then the winners of Thursday play on Saturday, right? Then the winners of Friday play on Sunday. Yeah.
I'm not sure. I don't.
No, that's definitely how it works. If you play Thursday and you win,
you can get
your second round is Saturday. So I wonder if you get. Like, if Illinois is going to play Thursday, if they win, they're going to play Saturday. So I'm wondering if you get a Thursday-Saturday package or a Friday-Sunday package.
I don't think so, because on the tickets it's listed TBA or TBD.
All right, okay.
Because they don't know who's going to win.
Anyway, we'll flesh this out as we go. Okay, I mean, but again, I go back to the guy. You know what? John, how is it when you age, you get tired of getting lied to by the government and everybody else, anyplace else? So when the guy from North Carolina comes on and says, "I wasn't anywhere near a part of it when I left the room," when I know it's total BS. How do you forget the guy who just walked out when he's a chairman?
It is tougher when you get old. Yeah. Everything's tougher.
Everything's tougher. I mean, it's if he'd walked back in there and North Carolina was not picked, I think he'd been the most stunned man on earth. Then again, if the ACC only got three teams, I think that would be something too, wouldn't you? Who's West Virginia in? Are they in the ACC? No, what are they in? I don't have no idea. Greg, do you?
What are we talking about?
Well, what conference is West Virginia in?
West Virginia is the Big East.
All right, so they screwed the Big East guy. All right, okay. West Virginia has a football team, though, don't they?
Oh, they were in the Big East for basketball.
I don't think they are anymore.
Now, there was that shakeup. Maybe.
Yeah, because they play football for sure. Anyway, we'll find out. So, John, what did you go to any of the parades?
Oh, no, I didn't. I was downtown yesterday and saw the Green River, you know, the holdover from the day before. That's pretty cool. I haven't seen that in a while.
You heard my story about that guy, didn't you? I don't know if I told it a few times.
Big 12?
Well, they're in a Big 12. Oh, yeah, that's right. They're the farthest east team from the Big 12.
Yeah.
Anyway. We were at Audrey and I were at this rib place in God, is it Walker's? No, what the hell's the name of the place? It's a name of the rib place, the same name as a little city, little town. It's off 20. So we're in there, and of course, you know, imagine that, me talking to somebody in the bar, right? And of course, the guy's this Irish guy from from Beverly, right? With 9 or 10 kids, and he's the only one that wasn't like a fireman or something. The usual Southside gig. He starts telling me, you know, I'm the guy who puts the dyes the river. And I go, really? He goes, yeah. He goes, we've been doing it forever. My dad did it. Now it's me. And I go, that's pretty cool. And, you know, he loved to talk about it, which, you know, I love to hear about it. Well, evidently, the stuff, if you don't know, the stuff they pour in the river is orange. Don't ask me how the hell it gets the river green when the stuff's orange. But the minute it hits the water turns this incredibly bright green, doesn't it, Jen? Even though the crap they throw in there is orange, these big, big, huge like drums they pour in there. Well, he goes, we get a contract to do it on St. Patrick's Day. It must have been, you know, the river, the thing here must have been like on a Sunday, and St. Patrick's Day wasn't until like a Friday or something. Well, they get a contract to go do the river on actual St. Patrick's Day over in Dublin. So I don't know how much the stuff they put on a cargo jet or what they did, but somebody paid for it. So there, what's the river in Dublin? I've never been there, but
the Liffey.
Okay, well they're in their couple little boats in the Liffey, and they're driving around. All of a sudden, and the bridges are mopped. All these people that are drinking, right? Imagine that, St. Patrick's Day. And he goes, everybody spots that the stuff in the barrels is orange. So they think
that's a riot.
They think he's like a plant, that he's going to dye the river orange, like he's really from the north. So they start winging beer bottles at him. So he's dodging the beer bottles. He says that as soon as they pour the stuff in the river and it turns green instead of orange, all of a sudden this huge cheer goes up and the beer bottle winging stops. He goes, for a while it was pretty dicey. I mean, you know, he goes, good thing they were drunk and they had good aim and we were moving pretty fast, because all these beer bottles are splashing in the river because they thought we were going to dye the river orange and just totally piss everybody off.
If it had been any other color but orange, there'd be no story.
They were not happy. God. So we had somewhat of a, other than the weather here in Chicago and other places, at least here we were warm than cold. We didn't like get wrecked like all these other. God, do you believe the amount of tornadoes that went down in the south? I mean, man, oh man. I don't know if I'd want to be an insurance company the last couple of years.
I was in Savannah, Georgia, '93. Which, you know, I wasn't really sure about this at the time, but it has a huge St. Patrick's Day parade, and it does.
Really?
Very Catholic town. But, it, you know, the day I was there, they had a tornado, too. And, you know, busted in all the windows of the hotel I was staying at. And I thought, boy, this is, you know, it's like Chicago with the twist. Cause we do get tornadoes in March as well, but, it has happened. But at first I learned that Savannah has such a huge, you know, Irish Catholic presence, and that the parade was such a big deal, and that, you know, it's often punctuated with, you know, the storms like we got last week. So,
well, I did, I don't know if I did it or some of the listeners sent it. It was a, you know, some chart of, I won't say your normal, but Tornado Alley, for lack of a better term. And if you went, you know, if you go back however long they've been charting this stuff, 100 years, if you were a tornado chaser, you would be in the spring, you'd be in Oklahoma, you'd be in Nebraska, you'd be in Iowa, and you'd be in maybe central Illinois or something like that. Now the serious, I mean, there always were tornadoes in the south, right? And hurricanes spawned tornadoes. I mean, they've always been around. But if you looked at the pattern over the last 40, 50 years, it's moved dramatically south. The real dangerous ones now are mostly in the south, and it's not like the joke used to be when I grew up, John, was you don't want to be anywhere near a trailer park in Illinois because, you know, you're going to get hit with one. You know, the Plainfield one, and the one, was it the most dangerous, most deadly one ever, was like in the 1930s in central Illinois, where it was like, they call it the three-state tornado or the four.
Oh, the tri-state tornado, yeah, 1925. Yeah.
I mean, it just followed.
Stayed on the ground across Missouri, Illinois, and Indiana.
And it essentially followed these railroad tracks, didn't it? Whatever the reason was on that. So, but I mean, somehow or another, the deadly tornado pattern, doesn't mean you're safe anywhere, seems to have shifted south some, and it's a month earlier. So instead of being like in April or May in Chicago, it's in Illinois, it's like a month earlier and it's further south. I mean, I have no explanation for that, or whether it's, you know, maybe it's just a phenomenon. But it's, again, have you read anything like that?
Well, you know, that's true, because remember in 1974 there was the big outbreak in the beginning of April, and the Ohio Valley, Illinois, Indiana, you know, South Bend got hit. I remember that very well. And, you know, Michigan, other places that we think of as, you know, maybe traditional tornado spots, always figured in the news more of 50 years ago. And it has shifted south. And I haven't read anything, you know, meteorologically what's behind that. But it would stand to reason that these trends, you know, have to do with a lot more than just the topography of a place. There's a lot more contributing to this kind of, you know, weather condition. So, yeah, but it's definitely now moved south. So, like, Mississippi, Alabama, which always did get some tornadoes. But Texas, places like that, now those are the...
Those are like the real hotbeds. We were... Yeah. Get a load of this. We were in March. It was later in the year. I forget what holiday was, but driving my two nephews out to Colorado to go skiing, right? So my brother was doing a seminar in L.A., and he flew back to Denver, Steamboat, wherever the hell we were, and drove back with us. And, you know, long story. But, of course, my nephews, we leave late, right? It's a three-day weekend. I don't know what weekend it was, Pulaski Day or something. And so we get in Nebraska, and the weather is just wild. Where you could look up at the and it's raining, and all of a sudden every radio station, no matter where you went, all they did was talk about the weather. And what, and you could look up and you actually see like almost like little funnel clouds come down and go back up. It was the weirdest damn thing. Well, the good news is my nephews were an hour and a half later too, getting ready, because an hour and a half ahead of us they had like a microburst. We went by like all the 18 wheelers were all in the ditch. I don't think it was a tornado, but it was a microburst of some kind. And all these poor guys. And if we'd have been an hour and a half sooner, you know, that might have been us. I mean, I don't know if I'd have kept it on the road or not, because the semi is obviously more vulnerable to that. But so people are calling in, and what they're seeing is the weather, a tornado. I mean, it was one that was going to come down like at any second. It didn't, you know, right where we were. But people, so one guy calls in, he's on US 30. And man, I'm seeing this funnel cloud coming down here. No, it's coming all the way down, but it's coming down. And the lady goes, where are you? He goes, well, I'm in my truck. He goes, well, where the hell is your truck? Oh, yeah, I'm in my truck. But everybody kept calling in. And if you went another 40 miles and you lost that station, you hit the seek on the thing, and you went to the same people in the next town. But it was really something to go through a weather event like that. And didn't Russell and his daughter went on a week-long tornado hunt, didn't they? And they were in...
I'm talking about that, yeah.
They were in Kansas and Nebraska and Oklahoma. They didn't go down to Texas. If you want to hunt them, you hunted them here in April usually, right? Or May? Or March? Yeah. Anyway...
You remember the South Side one in March? March 4th, 1961.
It was actually Palm Sunday.
It was Saturday. It was Saturday, I think. But
no, it was a Palm Sunday tornado. It was 67. We're right by...
67. This one was in 61, and it started like at 87th and Western, and hop skipped, you know, pretty much east, you know, northeast to the lake. And there was, I think, one fatality in the city of Chicago, and a couple roofs lifted off, and, you know, apartment buildings, you know, windows blown out and everything. And that was one of the rare instances of a tornado actually doing, you know, fatal damage in a large city.
The one I'm talking about, Nick, took out Oakland High School, remember?
Oh, the 67 one, yeah.
It took out the whole area that we ended up moving into.
Oakland and all that, yeah.
And it took the banquet hall down at Beverly Country Club, remember?
Yeah. That's the same day that the tornado out in, there's one in Belvedere.
Yeah. It was pretty bad.
That one did damage in the city, too.
Because, I mean, for those that don't know the topography of Chicago, it's pretty flat, but the highest point in the city is basically where Beverly Country Club is. So it hit Beverly Country Club, and it never touched down again. It just made it to the lake without touching down. But talk about an animal story. It's always good for an animal story, right? Like the Ed Sullivan Show. We had this old... We had a dog who wasn't that old at the time. And he had never had any problems with any... He was, you know, just a mongrel dog. He wasn't any kind of... That's back when you said you had a mutt and it wasn't kind of mixture, but he was just a mutt. And he never had a problem with any weather before. And this thing came within a mile of our house. And I don't know if it was the barometric pressure of it was, but he totally freaked out, even though it didn't, you could actually feel a little bit of pressure go by. It probably missed us by a mile. From that day onward, every time it rained, he was a puddle. He'd be shaking on the sofa. The thing scared him so much, it lasted the rest of his life.
Wow.
But whatever, I bet it was. I think they can sense barometric pressure more than we can. I mean, I think that's what it is.
They feel it. Yeah, yeah. They feel it in their ears.
But from that day forward, he's like, I'm afraid of this weather. I mean, it'd be drizzling out, and the guy'd be shaking on the sofa. I mean, it was really crazy. Anyway, so we're gonna go to.
They'd sense earthquakes and other things that we don't. You know, we can't read those signals. So
SP futures down 16. The S&P futures down 31. Or not? We're down a lot more last night. What did you make of? All the sell-offs last week, and then the comeback on Friday. Now looks like the comeback is in a little bit of danger, although we had run-ups in the silver, we had run-ups in the gold. Matter of fact, that stuff went up. We put positions out in there, and even though we ended up making a couple of shekels, went up too fast. We thought it was going to go up, but not quite that quick. Everything seems kind of in topsy-turvy, Jen, and I don't know what... From a political standpoint, not political, from a legal standpoint, I am totally aghast here at what the power is of the executive branch. I mean, I know I read, one of the listeners sent me 15 years ago this whole article somebody wrote about the Constitution and how really one of the things in there that's all balled up is that the executive branch actually has way too much power, or think they, and because people at the Continental Convention, Constitutional Convention, knew George Washington was going to be president, and they thought all presidents would be like George Washington. This morning I'm hearing that they basically have gotten rid of Voice of America, which has been on for since World War II, for God's sake. Now, if that, and I don't really want to go into whether, you know, it's a good move, bad move. How does something that has been funded by Congress for 75 years and signed by, you know, every president that's ever been in there, how does somebody just on a Monday morning decide we're not going to do it anymore and lay everybody off? How does that happen? I mean, I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying it's something I would never have thought was possible.
There has been a creep. I see it more of a problem on the local level with executive powers than at the national level. I think one of the, if you believe in some kind of federal system, for there to be any kind of balance, I mean, you got, you know, 535 representatives against one chief executive. There's got to be some kind of pushback by the chief executive to balance things out. But I think it's a much bigger problem when you look at states. And COVID really bore this out, where the legislature completely just backed off in so many states. And, you know, the emergency powers kept being extended and extended with absolutely no check on them at all. And, you know, I think that was probably a test case of some kind to see in some kind of disaster or, you know, military threat or whatever, how far the state executives could push back on the courts and on their own legislatures. And I think it came pretty clear in the COVID years that there was practically no limit. And, you know, it's unbelievable looking back now, but of all the abuses of all,
back up a little, John. Everybody has an emergency powers, when I say every, most states, I think, and you're the attorney, I'm asking you, have some sort of emergency powers, I'll say 30 days. What happens after that? I mean, is it automatically revoked, or is the legislature say you can go on?
COVID experience proved that you just extended and extended for 6 months.
But who extended it?
The governors.
Okay, and they were, but they also were finding some strength in that from what the federal people were doing, correct? I mean,
Well, the whole thing with mandates of any shape or form, which at the federal level too was, you know, an abuse by the executive. I mean, Congress, you know, had very little to do with that. Everybody took their marching orders from the NIH and CDC. Nobody questioned it. The governors just became rubber stamps for those entities. And, you know, in some cases went beyond, you know, even those recommendations.
Well, the technicality that I'm trying to push in here, if the emergency orders were 30 days, and yet you're doing what essentially the federal government tells you to do, is that almost like an automatic extension or not?
Well, it that was a test case, I think, to see how this would go down, and it went down very easily.
Well,
did
they actually go to the state legislature and get it, or the state legislature wasn't even there, so they did it anyway?
No, they just did it. But they declared an emergency for 30 days, and then kept extending it for various periods. The legislature didn't do anything about it.
But they could have. They could have said, wait a minute, after 30 days,
well, they should have. You know, they were obligated to. At one point, they say, hey, wait a minute, you know, we're now getting it through separation of powers problem, and we were from the get-go, but we were giving you 30 days because nobody knew what was happening, and they'd ramped up everybody's fears so much that people were very happy.
John, you just hit on something that, I don't know, actually the last 2-3 years of doing the show, it's a thing that is bugging me the most about where we're headed here. When I say we're headed, in terms of governance, in terms of everything. Don't take this wrong, Greg, but it is sometimes the younger people seem like they're all into just the outcome. What's the difference? We know he's guilty. We just hung him. I'm not accusing you of that, Greg, but I'm saying it, we're where some of the people that are more, I'll say, use the term, more conversant with the history of all this stuff, me for sure, I think the process is as important as the outcome. And that sets us apart as the U.S. of A. We know a lot of people are guilty. We think they have a defense anyway. And we made the decision a long, long time ago that once in a while, if a guilty person gets out, it's better than an innocent person be put to death by a mob. We made that decision in the 1700s. Maybe Britain did it in the Magna Carta. I mean, now all of a sudden, I think, John, if it was me, I would have, in the legislature, I would have tried to force the governor to come to us for an extension, and then I probably would have granted it. But I wouldn't have just shit-canned the process. Now, does that make me an idiot or what? Or does that make, I mean, come to us. By the way, we're going to prove what you're doing, but you need to do it. I mean, does that make me a knucklehead or what?
No, well, it was a seizure, you know, by the executive who pretty much, I think, read the situation and knew that there was not enough possibility of blowback or control with any of the legislatures. They were, especially, you know, depending on who, if you were a governor and your party was running the legislature too, as of course was the case in Illinois, you weren't going to buck the guy at the top or the woman at the top. You were going to, you know, curry favor and just back down. And if the governor decided to do this, you have pretty much, you know, a total acceptance of this by the elected representatives who should have been there to prevent this kind of thing from happening, at least to prevent it from being renewed again and again and again for more than a year. And yet, you know, this I think was the one of the big, most sinister outcomes of the whole experience, was to see if they could get away with it. If they could get away with it for that purpose, there's lots of other purposes they were perfectly willing to try.
But so why didn't the legislature feel like you and I do that? No, we need to maintain our spot here. And then, by the way, we'll probably approve what he wants to do.
Remember the climate, Tom. Had you had that kind of, you know, resentment or you know, blowback by the legislatures, the health officials would have, you know, gone into overdrive.
I'm not saying, I'm being careful here to say to not to change the decision. I'm saying change the process. I mean, we know the kid in Highland Park is guilty, right? We're going to give him a trial because that's our process. Why all of a sudden are we abandoning that?
Well, that is the important question. It's because they didn't see that as their mission, clearly. And nor did the governor really.
Their mission wasn't to change what he was doing. Their mission was to say, you got to come to us after 30 days. You got to do that too, in my opinion. But I know I'm a voice in the wilderness on this one. I get it.
Well, that's the unfortunate situation we're living in, where that kind of reasonable approach, you know, there should have never been the immediate run towards lockdowns as there was. You know, St. Patrick's Day. Remember 5 years ago?
Yeah, I remember it. Remember it exactly. Hey,
seems like a quarter century ago.
Actually, it was the day before. I went to my three favorite places the night before. And I had a drink just had one at every place. And I said, I wish, A, you guys reopen, and when you do, it's the same ownership. And fortunately, all three of them did. I went to Ceres, I went to Club Lago, and I went to the Tripoli. I remember it very well. And all of them managed to weather it to varying degrees of success. But, I mean, I think the process is important. And I don't think, I don't know why you would ever allow that to, like, with Voice of America, Jan, I don't know if it's obsolete or not. The point is, it's not a 2-day decision by people we don't even know.
And Kevin just you know texted about this. You know, no reason to believe it was a decision made, you know, on the spur of the moment. Or
why? When they're doing it every single day from the same group? Why?
Well, my gut reaction, as well as what I've read for the last, you know, 30 years or so about Voice of America, it was the CIA's private communication
John, if you and I spent, and brought Kevin with us, if we spent a month in there, we might have bleep canned the place too. I mean, but that's not the point. The point is, you take it.
This to me is reassuring, Tom. If it were something, you know, that I had more respect for, the Voice of America, I still you know, this is where I think you want somebody who knows more about it than the average person cares to know about it. And, you know, I have no problem with getting rid of the damn thing. I just don't.
That my moral compass is not Donald Trump. And we'll argue back and forth. We're no point in arguing about that. The point is, if that's the case, he just signed a funding bill the other day. Okay? They should have said, these five places we don't want in there. Now, if Voice of America is in the funding bill, I got a problem with it. And why shouldn't I? You're the attorney. The man just signed it. Now, and 3 days later to say, no, we're pulling this piece out? Is that a line item veto? What is that?
I think it's an executive order.
Okay, but the point... John, I know if you took the politics out and which side you're on and where you're going to say this is BS. This is crazy. You don't sign something on a Saturday and say we're canning all these guys on a Monday. I know I'm a voice in the world.
Depending on what you now are certain about and what you weren't certain about before, but I don't see any problem with the sequence. I do believe if this had been part of some kind of legislative package, that there would have been a lot of arm twisting and heavy lifting by all the intelligence operations who could pick up the phone and call any number of legislators that they had in their back pocket or knew or could twist their favor from, and this would have dragged out into something
so
much less than what
turned we're
out
willing to assume.
So whatever the calculus that went into it, I don't have a problem.
How far are the Trumpers and the fact that we didn't want Kamala Harris there? How far are you willing to go and let these people do? Is there any limit that you would say no?
When it comes to media operations like Voice of America,
you don't know that,
or NPR or PBS, I would say they don't deserve anything in the way of let's think about what we're doing here. No, just close the damn thing down. It's clearly an affront to the taxpayer.
Okay. So if you agree with it, it's okay.
They've abused whatever goodwill they could have worked up over the years, Tom, and turned it into a shill for
people. John, on one hand, you're complaining that the legislature is not involved, and now you're saying it's perfectly capable of whatever the guy is to just say no.
I just want the legislators to be looking out for the average taxpayer, the people who do the grunt work, and then were shut out of the process. They couldn't even earn a living under COVID. That's not the same thing at all.
Okay. So there is no limit.
Oh, well, clearly the COVID mess was an attempt to find if there were.
What if he turns around and shuts down Newsmax or Fox News? Now, is that too far?
Well, if they want to sue, they can sue.
Okay. Whatever. We're not going to get it.
You got to remember what you're dealing with, Tom. It's Voice of America goes back to what, 50s?
It's not about that. It's about people who funded it, people who just signed the thing to fund the people, which he just did, and the next day fired him. I mean, why can't...
It's no different than with USAID to me, Tom.
Why don't we just have a dictator? Why don't we just disband Congress? And a lot of people would want to do it. Why don't we just do that and make him our dictator? First of all, if we're going to make somebody a dictator, he wouldn't be my choice. Just a thought. And I don't think anybody voted for that. They voted against what's her name, which I certainly understand why. Anyway, let's not get into that.
Yeah, but Voice of America is not the poster child to be using for your argument.
What I'm saying is, it happened over a weekend. The guy was told not to come to work today. I mean, that is somewhat unusual when the thing essentially
that happens to people in private industry all the time.
There's a big difference.
Your job doesn't exist. Sorry.
There's a big difference.
Clean out your desk. We got security to help you do it.
There's a big difference. John, there isn't a Congress. There isn't. I'm talking about the process. Let's just hang the guy from Island Park. What's the difference? Why waste the money?
Well, due process in somebody's life versus their, desire of having a job for the rest of their lives. No, it's not the same thing.
I think there's a process here, and I think for whatever reason, and everybody's attempt to justify everything this guy does, if all of a sudden the city of Hillside or somebody...
Well, the alternative, Tom, is you don't want a process that prevents somebody from doing something like this either. which is kind of what the,
I think
the blowback from these crazy judges is.
I think the process ought to be that if you find, and by the way, Clinton and Gore did this. They found an area that was bloated. They went back to Congress and they reduced the funding and they laid people off with some training, and then maybe they found a job for them, maybe they didn't. There was a process. How do you not, you don't go back to Congress and because it did something get bloated? Sure, everything's, there's waste everywhere. But I'm getting letters, John, and it absolutely astound me of people that I think are really bright. And the best is, I was hearing somebody Friday night. Hey, I walked into the post office, and somebody's sitting there, and they didn't jump to take care of me quick enough. So screw them, lay them all off. Okay then. You know, we have one of the gentlemen on the show, one of the best guests, by the way. You know what? 20% of the people do 80% or 100% of the work, 80% of the work everywhere. Everybody knows that. That people, a lot of people do a lot more than other people, and that's just the way people are. Well, just fire everybody. Everybody there is a piece of crap. Everybody there deserves to be fired. And I have an issue with it, Johnny. As you know, I do. When you get people out of the education department, even if you and I were to agree, they've got people doing stuff that, you know, I don't know what the hell they're doing.
Well, that's the problem.
You don't need. You should say, this. Here's the difference. If it's me, I say over the last 25 years, we seem to have hired a lot more people in government than maybe we should. And by the way, 50,000 of those people came on my watch because he was just there. We think it's bloated. We're going to try the best we can to do training, and we think there's enough jobs in the private industry that over 6 months to a year, this will all shake out, and at the end of the day, we'll be stronger for it. You don't have to say, like with the education people, most of them didn't work very hard, and half of them were dummies. You don't have to say that, John. You don't have to say that, in my opinion. Now, some people love it. They love it. Oh, God, those people were all idiots. It's just not me. Whatever. But anyway, what is going on with the market, and what is the rest of the world thinking about this? What is Musk's response, and then how, you know, in terms of people don't like him, his stock is going down, although it's down again today. It's down to 279. Is this a combination of the electric car boom and maybe not getting where it ought to be, and places like Hertz saying they're not buying them again because they lost money on them? Or do you think it's related to the government? What is the same guy who, in his first term, looked at the market and that was his report card, now seems to be looking the other way? I don't. There's something going on here, and I don't know what it is. Can you help?
I think it's long overdue, Tom. You know, and I don't think the correction is over yet. I don't know how long it will go on or how far it will go. But I think the market has been overvalued for how many years? I mean, going back to 2010 with the run up. Go back to 1982. I mean, it's been, you know,
82 is incredibly undervalued when interest rates were whatever. Market was 800. Market was, Dow was 800 in 1982.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
I mean, but the run, now we're at, what, 40,000? So.
Yeah, and it's, you went from interest rates from 16 to zero. That's a ways.
But there's been, you know, an expectation, like with, you know, pretty much a lot of things, if this goes in one direction and it all becomes necessary to prop up at some point so that it can't go the other way. Of course, that's not what a market is at all.
It's politics, though. It's the wealth bubble. Those people are in charge. I mean, they got a lot of power, John.
Yeah, and I think there's, you know, that people are seeing that, you know, just looking at it from a micro level, I think real estate has yet to kind of make its presence felt as far as it could go, where you've got, you know, a very skewed market. And I hope, you know, Audrey can help us out.
Actually, I think we got Nance today.
Nance. You know, the high-end properties have just, you know, the sky is the limit, and everybody else is, you know, pretty much stuck. And, you know, interest rates have, you know, conspired along with this to make for a market that isn't moving at all. I mean, in the eyes of most people, it's become a burden to have real estate. And it's not a way of making money, certainly. It's not something you can freely get rid of or have much interest in acquiring for sure, that you're going to make an even worse investment than the one you have now. So that's kind of, I think, what's got people spooked. And you would think that this, you know, for a while it did drive the market up to greater and greater heights, because there wasn't really any way to make any money any other way. And I think now people are kind of suspicious of that and realize that that isn't a foregone conclusion either. It had to have happened at some point, and there's no reason for panic that I can see. This, anybody could have seen this as, you know, a correction at least. But remember, the whole climate time has been to deny that we're in a recession for the last, you know, 4 years, and to tweak the definition of a recession to ignore.
I might go like back that. To say 2007.
Yeah, well, I'll go there with you too. This has all been about keeping perceptions in line with hopes, and you know that's pretty dangerous.
Well, I mean, but the group you have behind you, and I'm not saying, you know, these are bad people or anything. The group we have behind you is the top 1 or 5% that owns assets. But God, if they own commercial property, they're not working out so hot. But if you own stocks, it is the stool that's keeping things together. I mean, it's even though we're down 4%, we're still up, you know, 30 some in the last four many years. That is the stool, or the one leg that's keeping the stool up, and. That the same thing happened in 1929, in the 20s, but let's hope the same outcome doesn't happen, is you had massive changes in where the money was and who had it. Some people did more money than God, and other people were in total depression in rural areas. Now you say, well, what's the difference, rural areas? But then it was well over 50% of the economy, wasn't it? So on one day, there was this massive comeuppance to where the market tanked. Now, you would like to see that not happen this time, and maybe the market stay steady for a while and everybody else catch up. Carl thinks there's no chance of that happening. I think managed properly, you know, maybe you got a snowball's chance in hell, but at least you got a chance. Now, what do you think? Is there any chance that this sort of, because right now the amount of money that some people have is astronomical. I mean, you're talking about, especially the entertainment industry, you're talking about people making, you know, $40-50 million a year for playing a sport. And you know that you could take whole swaths of a neighborhood. They're not making $40-50 million a year. It really is. I won't say wrong. It seems different. And every time that sort of happened, there's been some sort of a bad event that brings it back together. Is there any way we can get there without the bad event happening? We can maybe the market corrects 10% instead of 50 or something. Really don't want 50, do we? I don't.
No, I'd like to think it could happen. I do think, though, that, you know, the perception of people who see somebody like a Nancy Pelosi or other, you know, important people who play the casino, you know, economy, you know, have it finely tuned always to make tons of money for them and little for anybody else. This is something that's bugged a lot of people for a long time. And I think the market has some, you know, kind of exposure here in who it really works for and who's protected by this kind of, you know, scheme. And I'm not saying you have to blow the thing up to fix it. I wouldn't want to see that, because there'll be a lot of innocent people whose retirements are destroyed and, you know, employers and everything else will go belly up. Nobody wants that to happen. But I don't think that for the run-up we've seen, it translates to prosperity of any kind for the average person. So I'm not as much of a downer about the possibility of a correction, because I don't see that the opposite of that has been beneficial in any way.
Well, John, I'm obviously have a different perspective, because that's what I do for a living. and even though I have virtually everybody that's here that I manage money for is protected, if the market drops 50%, I'm going to say we're going to lose 5 to 8. Okay, now some people might say that's a spectacular performance. John, it's still losing. I don't want to lose five to eight for anybody. Yeah. I guess I could get lucky and buy some extra puts the day before if I saw it coming, but okay, that might happen, but I'm not I'm like the people on TV. Don't worry, I'll get the memo, and I'll be sure I have. But what I am promising is that I'm saying that for the people that are protected, I'm saying you're gonna be protected to the point where you're not gonna lose that tremendous amount, because, well, I can do the math for you. I'm looking at the queues. They're trading 479. Okay, if we pay $5 for the 475 puts, and the thing goes to 100, we're gonna lose $5 we paid for the put minus the $4 between 79 and plus the, so we're gonna lose $9. Okay, we're not gonna be losing 200, but I don't want to lose $9, you know, either, right? I don't want to lose anything for anybody. So my point is, but a lot of people think that they need zero protection at this spot, and, you know, and they've been right for a long time. And now the question is, can you see the change? And when I started the business, all people were in interest. I mean, what would possess anybody making 12, 13, 15% in the bank to put their money in the market? Well, the market was 800 and went to 40,000. That's why. Okay, but having that conversation was pretty tough. Now, we don't want another. I would think that the 29 fiasco won't happen because we have insurance in the banks. Now, you're not going to lose all your money in the bank. That's what caused a lot of what happened during the Depression, was Grandma Flanagan went to the bank to get her $2,000 that was her life savings, and all of a sudden the door hit her in the nose. That, so you just rip people's balance sheet away from them. So even so, it became to the point where now, if Grandpa Flanagan was laid off 6 months, he didn't have the $2,000 in the bank to keep it going on the farm or the mortgage on the house, so he lost everything. I don't think that's happened. We have things in place for that. I don't see that happening again. I don't see it. I mean, could it get? I think some people who, you know, have billions of dollars in sports teams could you know, lose a billion, but did they even really know they had the billion? I mean, John, what you're saying, I don't know if you even realize it, but what you're saying is so much of the population has not participated in the market going up that if it went back down, they wouldn't even care. Isn't that? I think that's what you said. Are you right?
Well, that isn't necessarily what I think. But I just think that the idea that you have to, you know, stave off, do what you have to prevent a correction, or, you know, hope it never happens, all that is not smart or realistic. I think until people get a sense of how the system is not completely skewed against them, you can't expect there to be popular support for propping up just the market without there being something else beyond that. I like what you were saying with, you know, the backups for savings and everything else. If things got really bad and you know people's, you know, savings were depleted or whatever, the government, of course, given past behavior, would print whatever amount of money is necessary. We'll put ourselves into the hole, you know, for another decade or three or four generations in the process. That's how we tend to address these crises when they come up now. But I just, to pin everything on the stock market, there's bigger stuff that's at work and likely to have far more suffering involved.
You're talking about, by the way, I think you're 100% correct, which I'm never supposed to say, but in terms of this guy, and I don't care who it is, if it's him or Biden or here, if the market corrects 20%, the dude is going to get buried in the midterm elections. So they will do whatever they have to do to keep the market up, just like the people before him. This is I don't know that Kennedy or Nixon or Eisenhower, I think they cared about the market, but now it's, you know, because of the 401ks, and I tell you what, John, I talk to people all the time, and I can name you, I'm not going to name them, I can name you people in their 80s that are 95% of the 401ks and essentially the QQQs, risky stocks, and they're not backing off, and they'll never back off. And if I say something like, well, boy, you know, it's you're not working anymore, you got to sort of be careful here. They immediately call their investment advisor and say, whoever telling you should ever lighten up is an idiot, because look at what's happened in the last 22 years. Every time somebody's lightened up when the market went down, all they did was make a fool out of themselves because they sold the bottom. I had three people a week and a half ago when the market started to go down call me and say they wanted to get together and talk about their accounts. And every one of them, I said, I'm available whenever you are. Never heard back now, because we had the rally on Friday. I'm sure the call went somewhere else. What are you talking about? See how we came back Friday? We always come back. What's the matter with you? I mean, it's there's nothing. It's exactly the same as trying to have a conversation with somebody in August of 82 saying maybe you should put a little bit of money in the market instead of, you know, instead of out of the bank. What are you talking about? I've been doing this for 14 years. The market's got nothing but go straight down, which it did. Well, it was actually flat over the 14-year period. And I make it 12% in the bank. What are you, some kind of moron? We ought to cut you off from some booze. These are hard conversations to have, John, when people want their money. I mean,
oh yeah,
and I don't know the future. It's not up to me to say, you know, it's not up to me to say. By the way, the market's going up because I don't know that. I hope it doesn't. All I can say is, when you put your $2 million in your account, you were working, and now you're 85. Things have changed. I can't even get that conversation in, John. Nobody wants to hear it. Not nobody. I mean, but you would think everybody would be thinking that way, but they don't. And why? Because it's a change. Friday, the people on CNBC were giddy. Oh, if you just hung in there, the market comes right back yet again. Must have been 15 guys in a row talking about it. But only a moron sold during the week. You know, we're going to have to go to break here. Go ahead.
But that's what staves off panics, and that's a good thing. You know this?
Well, okay.
You don't want everybody to fall in line because they're all worried. They're all going to, you know, clear out. That's how, you know, it's very difficult to recover the kind of lost ground that comes from that kind of response.
Oh, yeah.
So there's lots of reasons to be patient and not to be you know, too nervous about this. I would say just, you know, to go back to the political thing for a minute before Nancy comes on here, but what happens in the midterm elections, I think it's going to be different this time around unless the Democrats get their house in order. Because I don't see any kind of concerted messaging that's coming to the forefront with a party that's so deep in the hole when it comes to public perceptions and trust. Unless there's some kind of change, and I expect there will be, and I would like there to be, just to keep the democratic system in healthy working order. But unless that happens pretty fast, you're going to see.
I don't think if there was a presidential election, this is just one man's opinion. In 2 years, I don't think you'd see. There's not somebody can come to the fore that quickly. But if all of a sudden you start having issues with perceived cuts, and you know a lot of people that they're firing were Trump supporters. A lot of stuff, these agricultural things that they're thinking of cutting. I think you're only talking about two or three representatives. I mean, could the Democrats swing 10 districts where people got laid off in? I could see that in a second. I don't see that much of a connection between necessarily the districts and the White House. I mean, how many people in the world hate all congressmen except their own, right?
You know, the thing that should happen with Democrats, although I don't see it happening, is that they have to have somebody who is strong enough and you know persuasive enough to remake the party in that person's
without a doubt. Let's talk about that next week. But there's no doubt about that. That doesn't mean that five Republicans in district where maybe people got laid off or farmers didn't get their check, that they're not in danger. There's a big difference, I think, between the two of those.
No, but I just don't know what being, you know, depending on who these people are that replace the Republicans in some of these downstream races, I just don't see there being any kind of philosophical bent to any of it other than it's, you know, the Trump derangement system all over again, that you can't expect these people to think any more than, you know, getting the guy at the top. That can't be.
Oh, there's no doubt that you got to have a program. Plus, the guy's going to be out in 4 years anyway. So you got to have something going forward. I mean, we have no disagreement there.
Yeah, I don't have a lot of hope for that happening, though, Tom.
I'm saying that doesn't mean that they can't retake the House. What does it take, three seats?
But I, you know, look at the party that may be taking it back. What kind of party is it going to be? Who knows?
What is the Republican Party if you don't bow to this guy? Anyway, I mean, this guy better be careful because Musk could take him down in the midterms. I honestly believe that. Anyway, S&P futures down 8, NASDAQ futures up 7. Go to real quick. There's not much going on here. I know we have Nancy on.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jock.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients, and you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are, what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here. Right now.
You can shear a sheep many times, but skin him only once.
Hello, Norfolk Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howe. At Burn on the board, SP Futures unchanged now. NASDAQ Futures up 35 again. We were down pretty heavy last night after a big rally on Friday, and now we're kind of unchanged and coming back the other way. Maybe we'll have 2 days. I'm going to keep this real quick here because we got to get Nancy on and we're running a little late. Over in Asia, a big move here is the China came out and said they're going to do all kinds of stimulus now to get their stock market up and other stuff. So Nikkei's up 343 at full 1%. Hang Seng is up 185.8%. Shanghai, however, is only up 6.2%. So that's kind of the news there. The other in bonds, the Japanese 1.51. That's a 10-year high on their rates over there. So a few things going on here. Nothing crazy. Do we have Nance?
We do indeed.
Yes, hey Nance, how are you? Sorry, we're a little late on you here.
That's okay. It's Happy St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, happy. I actually celebrate on St. Patrick's Day. I feel. Like I'm the only one left. Everybody else has played out after the last 2 days. Today's my day, and I like St. Patrick's Day.
Everybody likes St. Patrick's Day.
But can you go 3 days in a row, Nance? You're already supposed to have been downtown. You're supposed to be at the Irish Parade in Southside. Now, are you ready to go? Are you still young enough to get hammered 3 days in a row?
If John comes, I will be. Yeah, well, I know he'll be my designated driver.
God.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
You know what? That would be fun. You know what we should put on our bucket list, all of us, is a big group. We should go out to New York some year and actually go to the St. Patrick's Day on St. Patrick's Day.
Why New York?
Because they're like the only one left that does it that way. Maybe Dublin. Actually, we go to Dublin. Here, when I started on the trading floor, the St. Patrick's Day parade was down LaSalle Street. People who were at work, came out for the parade, and everybody, if you wanted to, you could walk. Audrey walked with the policeman retirement fund guys 1 year. You could go. People on the trading floor just found a politician they knew and walked with them. And, of course, you all piled out of there into the bar, the sign of the trader, and the board of trade. You'd have to go on Saturday morning over to Columbus Drive. It was right here where everybody was.
Well, I thought we were the city that really celebrates St. Patrick's Day. I mean, I was downtown Friday. I saw a lot of people coming in.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, Saturday was, it's the biggest, the bar in the building here. It's their biggest day. They close the whole street down and back. Well, it's a big day. I'm just saying, I want it, you know, I want it on the day. I'm, you know, I don't want,
I agree with you on the day. I just, I'm sure, why New York? Do they celebrate St. Patrick's Day?
On St. Patrick's Day, they have a huge parade. It'll be today.
Oh, they do?
Yeah.
Well, we'll just fly right out of Midway.
That's what I'm saying. Or we go to Dublin, might be more fun. Well,
we can go to Dublin. I gotta get my passport done.
Yeah.
Updated. I think mine is up. Don't you get 10 years on those?
10 years, yeah.
Yeah, I think mine is gonna be coming up.
I got mine. Mine's current. By the way, do you have your, you guys got your real ID and your driver's license in case you want to go somewhere?
I do. I got caught on that years ago in North Carolina. There's South Carolina. They wouldn't give me a car because I didn't have a real ID. And we didn't even have real ID then.
We just had it. We got it like a couple of years ago. We were able to get it, right? 2 years, 3 years.
Right. But this was before that. And they said, we don't know what this is. We, you know, it was, I looked at them like they were nuts, but.
That's a real pain in the ass to get.
Yeah, it is.
For those who have no idea what we're talking about, the Illinois driver's license was a good ID to get on a plane for, like, forever. All of a sudden, they decided, no, it's not good enough because you needed a bigger background check or something. And Illinois kept putting it off, till finally, I think the airlines or somebody said, no, if you don't have it, you can't get on a plane, basically. So when you go get one, you got to bring, like, I don't know, three or four types of identification. You have to bring, like, the two utility bills,
yeah,
or something. Something to make sure you live in the house you live in.
Address. Yes, that's correct. And usually a utility bill or something like that. But I did it when they first offered it, because I had already had this experience in South Carolina renting a car. So I went right away, so I've had mine. Everybody who waited, that's what really hurt them.
Well, now you have to make an appointment if you want it.
Right, because I think they just got overwhelmed.
Well, if you do renew your passport, my piece of advice would be make sure you get the little handheld card, because that's a real ID.
I do have a real...
There's a little, like a driver's license-sized passport.
Yeah,
really?
It's optional.
Yeah, it's optional.
Oh, okay. Well, I got a year left, so I maybe will start that now, because God only knows how long all that'll take.
Actually, you know, it was... they're pretty quick. I got mine done during COVID, and it only took a couple of weeks. I got it back.
I wonder which we have to do.
Now, the little card, it's only good for, well, who knows now, Trump's starting all the fights. It used to be good for driving into Mexico and Canada, right, Jen?
Yeah.
If you flew, you still need the other one. But it's definitely a real ID for getting on, like, a plane here or anything like that.
Yeah, it's easier than, I mean, you don't need anybody to stamp it, so it's you know, for that kind of purpose, it's you put it in your wallet, and it's like having a, you know, driver's license. It's usable elsewhere.
But if you fly into Canada,
we definitely need to bring John with so he can lead the group. Well, and explain to the customs agent what it means.
You're gonna explain John to the customs agent? That could be interesting.
No, he'll tie him up and we'll all sneak through.
Oh God. All right, Nancy, John opened up the subject before you came on. Various pieces of real estate are going kind of different directions in valuations. Obviously, the big commercial stuff in some of the cities is getting clobbered. Are the condominium buildings, like in Chicago, are they in trouble? Or they were for a while, but the rents are pretty high. They should be okay, don't you think?
You know what? I just was in one Friday, in fact, with Aud, and they didn't look like they were having any trouble at all. I mean, the person purchased it, and it was a nice spot. I was going to say we could all go down there next year and just cram in overnight, right? I mean, everybody will have like a 1-foot by 1-foot space to sleep in.
It's just, well, you know, if you're overserved, doesn't matter. You sleep anyway, right? Yeah.
Right. Yeah, we'll all be sleeping on top of each other. And doesn't matter. And then we can just all fall out in the morning, pack up our backpack, and go to the parade. And no, it did not look like there was anything in this particular building. It was very nice, very nice.
So, but the commercial buildings. I guess my question is, I think you're spot on, Nance. But where all those people work? If half the jobs out of downtown are gone, where do they all work?
You know what? I believe this is the sign that this person was 5 years ago telling me on a Christmas Eve that he had to have a pre-approval letter because he was going to buy in Florida. And I said, well, you work in Chicago. And he said, look, if we go back to work, he said, the most they could do is send us back 2 days a week. We'll never go back to work full time anymore. And my generation has to get this through our heads. So this person has to go back to work. He's back to work 3 days a week now, has to go back. And with Trump asking that all the federal employees go back to work full time, I think this is the this will lead or is the entree into the rest of the corporate big corporations following behind, saying everybody's got to go back. And I believe that's why he's looking back downtown.
I would one man's knucklehead opinion on this is I think people should be back to work. Okay, I sure would like to see the Federal Reserve get their people back to work, but I also think that Jan and I were talking about this is 5 years ago, right?
If 5 years ago, I had this conversation with him. Yes,
but if you don't if you don't at least recognize on a federal level or whatever that the costs of going back to work, that you better get a 15-20% raise just to make you even. It's not even. All the bridge rates are up, the tolls are up, the price of a car is damn near doubled, the parking's gone up by 30%. It's not same as 5 years ago. And anybody who thinks that somebody doesn't deserve a little something for coming back, it's the reason why a lot of people don't want to come back because they can't afford it. In one man's opinion.
I don't even know if they're thinking about that time. I think that they just, if they get everybody back to work, they'll get the economy going. These restaurants can come back. The commercial buildings can stop falling apart. It's going to go the other way. What it does to the consumer, I don't think that's being taken into consideration.
No, I'm not talking about the consumer, but there was a company here in Chicago. I got the thing from Crane Chicago Business last week, and I forgot the name of the firm. I'd not really heard about them. They're demanding everybody come back to week 5 days, and everybody who's been at home, they're giving them a 30% raise.
That's wonderful, but I don't think it's going to happen for everybody.
No, I mean, at least it's a recognition that the car you got rid of, to replace it now is 50 grand. I mean, you can't just say it's even Steven for you money-wise, because it's not. I mean, is it?
No, employers will find that out. Nobody's going to work so they can lose money. So, there'll have to be adjustments made in salary structures. So that everybody recognizes if you have office space downtown, you're trying to staff, there's a premium attached to that that you didn't have to worry about 5-10 years ago.
I would say, Dance, as somebody who always dresses and looks good, if you had to be somewhere 5 days a week, how much are you heading to the high-end store and paying in duds in the next 3 days to get ready?
God, I don't even want to think about it.
Like I said. And
I wouldn't even want to think about it.
Mr. Flanagan, go out and buy yourself 5 suits. What?
Suits?
Yeah, suits. What are those? Yeah. How much do they cost? We'd be like, do I have to get shirts and ties to go with it? Oops.
I mean, I used to have 10 of them, Tom. I had to wear one every day, so it was constantly rotating at the dry cleaners.
Wait a minute. I can donate ties. I have them left for my husband.
Oh, God, there you go.
The one thing I didn't get into, I kept some. That's why I can donate some.
The great tie story is my buddy Dr. J. Jan, unfortunately, is what do you call it? Red green colorblind, or partially? I don't know. I mean, I never talked to him about it. But whenever he would buy ties, he'd get the most incredibly bright ties, right? And I'm like, so we were in New York 1 week, and he goes on Canal Street, and he loved to buy his ties on Canal Street for like 3 for $10. So he gets his tie, and it is so yellow, and it is like fluorescent, you know, like it was a battery in a damn thing. A month later, we're in Washington, we're in his breakfast with all these senators, and Senator Phil Graham walks by, sees John's tie, and goes, boy, son, that's quite a tie. If I didn't already have a cup of coffee, I'd sure be woke up now. He says to him, I'm sitting there laughing my ass off, right? John's like, oh, thank you, Senator. Phil Graham, Wendy Graham. Yeah, right. She was the head disciplinarian at Ayn Rand, wasn't she? She was in charge of a guy, or what do they call it? Corporate governance.
Yeah.
How did that work out? Everybody's in jail but her.
it's best not to look too far. You know?
you know what? You don't want to ask too many questions, I guess. Huh? Unbelievable. Right. So, Nance, what's going on in the housing area? That area by you and Odd, that all the new houses, all the million-dollar ones are sold. I mean, it's...
She told me that on Friday. I was quite surprised.
I could say it's a bifurcated market, John, but it's more than two levels. It's about five, isn't it?
Trifurcated? Tetrafurcated?
Yeah, well, quadricated, quintricated. I mean, so you've got areas where you guys are, Nance, where people who are trading houses, selling one higher than they bought, buying a new one higher than they bought, maybe having to put a little bit of money in there if they're going up, maybe get a little money back if they're downsizing. There's this kind of trading market that Aud is very much involved in and does a great job because all those people, she sold the house originally, so they're going to use her again. Then there's the people you're refinancing because they're some of them who are buried on credit cards enough where they're willing to give up a 3% rate for a 7% rate. You've got buildings downtown that they can't give away. Some areas of the country, in Florida, the insurance prices are chasing everybody out. If you had to put a summary on this, how could you give a 15-word answer?
You can't. I mean, we just have to wait and see what happens. It's just playing out in front of our very eyes, and we'll have to see where all this runs.
Does anybody have even a hint of the... We covered Florida seemingly a lot more because maybe so many people from Chicago and the Midwest have places in Florida. I haven't heard boo about the people and the fire stuff in California. Have they gotten their insurance checks? Are they going to be able to rebuild? Are they getting enough to cover the new codes? Has anybody heard a drop of news on that?
No, not at all.
Isn't that kind of strange? We haven't heard of... Does nobody care about those guys or what?
I just think that if whatever's going on out there, you're not hearing it because the news hasn't covered it. And so, obviously, it can't be good.
Well, it also could be just there's so many people from our area here that have places in Florida that it is enough for a piece of news on the news here and in the papers here, I think, right? I mean, is that just part of it? I mean, I don't know anybody who lives in Palisades. It's not like that's your summer home, I don't think.
Not for me.
No, I mean... So, in general, what do you when you have your feelers into Florida? What's going on there? Are they still getting the exit? I mean, Bill Moriarty was saying last time he was on that Austin, Texas is getting all kinds of people in Florida.
I have heard that a lot of people are going to Austin, but to be honest with you, I think that's just another. I think that's a phase. I think it's a phase, and it will run its course like everything else, and then it'll be deserted like everything else. Not deserted like bad deserted, but I mean, it'll just go back to more of people that are from there.
Well, in Florida, I mentioned this. I mentioned maybe last week when I was on, but my sister-in-law's cousin had a place down there, and now it's. She's like on the 10th floor of some building. They still can't determine whether or not they're going to fix it or tear it down. I guess she's still paying the mortgage. She said, this is what, 2.5 years ago now. And what's the deal on that? I mean, how long does she have to keep paying? Is it
as long as you own it, you're going to pay for whatever you're going to pay for it. So you just don't get out of the mortgage because of a sad story. That's the way it is.
So, but the insurance rates are not going to, if they have 2 years without another hurricane, those rates are not coming back down, are they? So a lot of people can't afford that. Are they just out or what?
You know what, Tom? To be honest, I don't have a clue how they're going to solve all that. I don't think they know how they're going to solve all that yet. And the more time they give it, they're hoping that everybody just gives up and, I don't know, walks away or whatever. I don't know what they're going to do.
Well, if you have a house and the house got wrecked, you could, if you wanted to, spend the money. I think you can. I'm axing. You could fix the place up and say, guess what? It's not going to happen twice. I'm going to self-insure. I'm not going to have any insurance going forward because I can't afford it. If you're in a condo place or a townhouse, an area that has an association, they're going to maybe make the best deal, but they're going to pay it, and they're going to say, Nancy John, you owe it, and if you say I can't pay it, your only window is to sell it and get the hell out of there, right?
But your first premise that, you know, I own a home, and then if I don't want to pay it, I'll self-insure it. There is no self-insuring in if you have a mortgage.
No.
Right.
It's not allowed. So the only way you can do that is if you own it 100%. Then you're really self-insuring it. Because if you lose it, you lose it. You're on your own.
Is the fallback position, I don't even want to go there, is a fallback position a place that was $500,000, finding some, you know, I won't say carpetbagger, but I just did. Somebody says, I'll give you $250, and at that number, I won't insure it, and I'll just Airbnb it, or I'll do something, and I won't insure it at that number. If it wrecks, it wrecks. Is that the bottom line?
But it has to be a zero mortgage. It's a zero mortgage. So it's if you have a $500,000 house and it's paid off, or $200,000 house and it's paid off, you can choose to not insure it at any point in time.
Okay.
But then if it gets wrecked and a carpetbagger comes along and gives you $50,000, that's what you got for it.
And then he probably is not going to insure it because he only paid $50 for it.
Right. Then it can continue on. But most people on their single most valuable possession most people just don't can't afford to self-insure because they don't own it, they have a mortgage on
right.
it. Most people have a mortgage on their property, so they have no choice. That's the whole idea behind borrowing the money and having, that's the backup plan, is the insurance will pay for it.
How many people do you think could
So the question, like in the, with the your sister, you know, your sister-in-law's sister, did the insurance company pay out anything?
I think they're still deciding what they're going to do. I don't think they've gotten a dime. I think she got her content check.
That would make sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then the master association policy has to pay out.
Right, and they still don't know whether they're going to.
Yes, if it's a complete loss, you know, that's looking at it from one angle. If there's repairs they can make and get it back up to code, those are other, you know, expenses and a different formula for it. So until they decide which they can handle, you know, people are really blocked. There's nothing you can do, really.
I think this is all being made a hell of a lot worse by the... Where was the place where the thing, half of the place fell down?
Was that Surfside?
That was in Florida.
But it was on the other side of the place, right? Other side of the state. It was in Lauderdale or someplace. It was on the Atlantic coast, correct?
Yeah, it was north of Surfside. I think it was north of
Fort Lauderdale.
Miami.
Okay.
So I think what happened there, guys, is that they caused all these places to all get, you know, inspected, and I think a real lot of them that were built on sand and so forth were found to be wanting in terms of their security, and there was massive amounts of work being undertaken to secure these buildings that were built 40, 50 years ago. Maybe the job wasn't done properly. So I think just about every contractor worth a squat was already sort of backed up before the current hurricane hit. So this building I'm talking about with this lady, even if they decide, okay, we're going to fix it, it's not like the guys are going to show up tomorrow with the cranes and the diggers. I mean, I think there's probably a how-many-year waiting list to get somebody to help you, John. And doesn't Florida have, like, really strict, if you're not licensed in the state, you can't do work down there or something?
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, the whole push to get all these condo buildings with adequate reserves, because they all felt, you know, there was this now... very clear risk of this kind of thing happening in a lot of places where you could have a complete collapse of the building or just settlement or whatever else is going to destroy its habitability. There's very few people that can sustain that kind of a condo budget and have sky-high property taxes and, you know, property insurance, you know, homeowners association, condo assessment. you know, special assessments for improvements, whatever. The principal and the interest on the mortgage starts to look like the easy thing now. So
that's what happens.
And you're right. It looks like the easy thing, doesn't it? Because all the rest is a nightmare.
The rest is just there's no telling where it can go, and you know, and that's what's going to put people under, not their mortgage. You know, even if it's 6-7%, that isn't what their problems are now, I think.
And it's the we got a dash here pretty soon, but the when you go do a mortgage for somebody, I mean, insurance and taxes are always part of your calculation, correct? Because it's what somebody can pay. Well, I've heard that homeowners insurance in Illinois last year went up, you know, what, 20% or something, or some number.
It's up.
Is that becoming more and more of a problem when you go get somebody a mortgage? And how do you estimate the taxes? Because they've gone up faster. If you did a mortgage 5 years ago, I bet the taxes are a lot higher now than you would have expected back then. How do you deal with that? When you
don't have to anticipate what's in the future. You only have to look at what it is now. So it's very simple. I mean, you have to get a quote, and it has to you have to get a quote, and you take last year's insurance number. You take that, and that's what it is. Unless the bill's been issued, then you take the half of the first bill, the half of last year's bill, and you put them together. If there was a senior freeze on it, you look up how much that was worth for the person last year, and if they had a homeowner's exemption, you look that up, and you add all the numbers up, and that's it. But you don't have to worry about what it's going to be down the road.
It seems like some of the mortgages that everybody's doing, not just you, a lot of people are right on the red line. If you knew insurance and taxes would go up 10% next year, how many people wouldn't make it?
That's an impossible question to answer, because they can always take it out of another bucket. You know, maybe what they spend on, you know, how much. I always ask people, how much free money are you going to have at the end, so that they have, you know, wiggle room. They always have. You're not going to what 100% of what it is they make. So that part doesn't matter. And you got to remember, if they get in that much trouble, they can always sell it. That's the big thing. If you know, if you're really putting 20% down, and let's say you and your wife both worked, you needed to qualify, and now, you know, she gets in a car accident and gets, you know, doesn't have disability insurance and is going to be laid up for 2 years, and things aren't going to work out, you can always sell it. But when you go in at 5%, that's where it gets kind of dicey.
Yeah.
But you still can sell it. I mean, they'll just do a short sale and you'll get out. It's not making a payment, expecting to be able to live there for 2 years. That's where the problems come up.
Yeah. Things freeing up at all? You're doing some refis, and a lot of them have to do with mortgage debt. I mean, credit card debt, right?
And a lot of it just has to do with debt. Yep. Just all kinds of debt. There's all kinds of debt, you know.
Wasn't it more fun when somebody had you refinance and somebody's paying $3,000 a month, and when you're done, they pay $2,500 and everybody's happy? Was that more fun?
Yeah, everybody's happy. Well, we're not going to see that for a while, so.
John, any more questions out of you? Because we got a dash.
Nope. Happy St. Patrick's Day. Yeah. It never was a movable feast for me. It's the day, like you said, John.
Does that mean I'm going to see you tonight?
Well, I don't know. Possible.
We might have to talk about that. Nance, take care of yourself. Thank you, Matt.
And I don't get invited. What kind of deal is this?
You guys were down here the other day, and you didn't call me, as I recall.
Oh, who told you? John and I were down there with Odd. I'm telling you, we weren't supposed to tell you. Who talked?
Well, if it wasn't you and it wasn't the poodle, it had to be Odd, right?
I don't know.
Now we could have gathered ourselves up and met the ladies, especially if they were buying, John. We did that. We could have done that.
Oh, always available for that.
Yeah. Anyway, take care, guys. SP Futures right, down 3. Nasdaq Futures up 13. Kind of flatlining here this morning. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
You have to be closing all the time.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.
That's all, folks.